on everything going on in the world of MMA. And Brett, that is a lot so far today.
I like Wednesday. Wednesday feels good, doesn't it?
It does. It's a nice day.
Yeah, it feels good.
It's middle of the week. Usually, you know, Wednesday's usually quiet, I feel like, in the, you know, in the whole world. Everybody's kind of, you know, you're getting tired already from Monday and Tuesday, and then you're looking forward to, starting to look forward to the weekend. And then we'll bring you some MMA news and try to jazz up your Wednesday nights. I don't know.
Perfect. Just perfect way to spend your Wednesday evenings.
There you go. So that's really what we'll try to do. Well, so much to get into. I don't even know where we're going to start. I mean, I really, this morning, was thinking about, like, all I wanted to talk about was Conor McGregor's yacht obsession. Have you followed that at all?
Probably not as obsessively as you have, but...
It's ridiculous. Like, he found this yacht, like a $350 million yacht, and he's just like, he cannot stop posting about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, this could be actually a good topic tonight. No, it's not, because 18 million things have happened. Let's start with the most recent and most relevant breaking news in the sport. If you have not heard yet, Daniel Cormier is your UFC light heavyweight champion. This is not totally unexpected. Maybe the timing a little bit unexpected, but Cormier is named champion. John Jones stripped of the title. We saw this coming, I guess, but I thought it might happen down the road a little bit with USADA, but with the B-sample result coming out last night, the fight result being overturned this morning, it just makes sense for the UFC to do this.
Yeah, you were expecting it to happen later?
I thought they'd let the USADA proceedings play out a little bit because that is their, I mean, that's their policy.
But once that fight changes to a no contest, it's like he didn't win the title. It's like John Jones, it's like that fight never happened. For record-keeping purposes, that fight never happened. So well, how can he be the champion?
Especially when, you know, Dana White said a couple weeks ago, right when this first happened, well, first they said they'd let the process play out, but they also said that the title will not be vacant. It would go back to Daniel Cormier. So, I mean, once they said that, then you're just kind of waiting for what's the step in the process that is going to trigger the UFC to make this decision? And, I mean, you're right. The California Commission coming out and saying it's a no contest made it easy. And it also lets them move on. I mean, to me, they were just looking for the first opportunity to say, okay, this is the right chance. But it could have been last night with the B sample coming back. Could have been, as we said, today, California Commission coming out their ruling. It could have been when USADA finally makes their determination after they go through arbitration and everything else. But this is going to be a crazy process because it's both California Commission and USADA having their adjudication processes. The UFC doesn't have to do anything with it. The UFC can do whatever they want. As I said earlier, you know, it's an interesting thing. You know, people talk about, oh, belts mean this or mean that. Like, the UFC as a promoter could make you the champion if they wanted. Like, they can give the belt to anyone.
Yeah.
Just because it was no contest doesn't mean they had to do it. But to me, it was just like, let's find the right time. Yeah, this is the right time right now.
I mean, I got the sense that Dana White was ready to do it the second that John Jones' failed test came out.
Well, I kind of did too, and I think that's what happened. If you really want to get into the weeds of decision-making processes, if you remember, the day that the positive test came out, TMZ reported that the title had been stripped from John Jones.
Mm-hmm.
For those that don't know, when TMZ reports something, it's usually Dana White calling them and telling them something.
They don't have feelers just dispersed throughout the mixed martial arts world? Is that what you're telling me?
I mean, I guess that is the accusation I'm throwing out there. It's not really an accusation, but I mean, that's Dana White calling them and telling them this happened. And my thought is not that TMZ got the story wrong. It's that Dana White impulsively called them and said, we're taking the title away.
Yeah.
And TMZ reported that. And then UFC officials were saying, let's let the process play out a little bit before we make this determination. And then Dana White had to back off that a little bit.
Yeah, exactly right. Yes. But his initial reaction was like, I think what a lot of our initial reactions was, it's like, I'm done with John Jones. Finished. Don't even want to talk about it anymore. Let's forget this ever happened. Let's make Daniel Cormier the champion. I'm not surprised that was Dana's reaction. I'm not surprised it was a lot of the fans' reaction. Now that we've had time to cool down a little bit, I mean, I do think that there is a lot to pay attention to when it comes to John Jones's case, how it plays out with USADA, how it plays out in California. There's a lot to talk about. But initially, yeah, I think a lot of us were just like, this guy, you know? And yeah, so they're like, hold up, you know, let's not strip John Jones of the championship just because we're emotional. Let's find the right time. And to me, always, this was going to be the right time. Once the B sample came back and the California knew, yes, 100%, we have a positive drug test on our hands, that becomes a no contest, and you can't have a champion walking around when he technically did not win his last his championship fight.
Well, and I think more importantly, I mean, maybe not ranking in importance, but one of the things that you have to think about is this process could take a long time, and they may want to schedule a title fight in the light heavyweight division, so you may as well get a champion crowned so you can move on and not wait for the entire process to play out. So now Cormier is the champion. You have the ability to now book a championship fight in that division, which is certainly something they need in terms of, you know, headlining pay-per-views and the like coming up on the schedule. So now they do have a champion in Daniel Cormier. We'll get to some of the comments he made tonight upon learning that he once again is champion despite losing to Jon Jones. But you just said there are things to pay attention to. There are, you know, steps that you're going to be following. So I guess what are you looking forward to in this process, and what are you paying attention to with the Jon Jones proceedings?
Well, I mean, for me, it starts off with the fact that the California State Athletic Commission's executive director, Andy Foster, straight up said on the record, this one doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
And I think that's a good place to start, because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense that Jon Jones would pass urine tests in early July, know that he's going to be tested in and around the fight, and then failed that test.
For that substance.
It just really, yeah, for the substance, which is, you know, I don't think we need to go super deep into it on this show, but just it's a substance that if you are going to be out there trying to trick drug collectors and get performance enhancement out of these substances, this is not the one you take at that particular time close in that proximity to the fight. It just doesn't add up.
Right.
So what I'm looking for, I guess, is if Jon Jones's team is able to identify, or I guess the better word to use, you know, provide a supplement that he says he was taking that is in fact tainted with the anabolic steroid turinabol. That is question number one. If that doesn't happen, what happens next, and what is the appeals process for Jon Jones? Because I got to tell you, I think it's going to look different than some of these others. I think Jon Jones has resources available to him that a lot of other fighters in the past have not. I think he has nothing. I don't want to say nothing to lose, but almost. I mean, in his situation,
he doesn't have anything to lose.
I mean, if he's facing a very lengthy suspension, which he is, a maximum of 4 years, then you have the motivation, obviously, to challenge this to the full extent that you can, and you have the resources to do it. So we're going to see just how buttoned up I think the commission is, that the USADA is, and typically when we have cases like that and you wonder how buttoned up are these, you start to see little leaks in the process, and it's going to be interesting if there are any leaks if it does in fact get to that point.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be one to monitor and play out. It could take, you know, I've seen people say, when is this going to be solved? It's months. It's at least months. It could be years. Like, it could take
a long
time.
I think a big factor in that, how long it takes, is how long are they going to suspend him for? I mean, if they come back and you know, they have their discussions and they, you know, just to keep this short, if they believe basically that John didn't intentionally take something to cheat, if they say, you know what, we're going to do 18 months or we're going to do 2 years, and I'm not saying that's what they're going to do, but then Jon Jones has a decision on his hands of how much is worth it to then fight it. Because if then you fight it, then you're facing the potential of a max. So it's just like any legal case, really. What are the chances of an agreement, a settlement, essentially? That obviously speeds up the timeline. If there is no agreement, this could drag on for quite a while.
Yeah, and by the way, this could be the Ezekiel Elliott / Tom Brady case for MMA and for the UFC, where somebody challenges because they have, as you mentioned, the resources. Like, a lot of fighters that get suspensions, like, they look at this and say, am I going to spend $1 million on a defense to try to fight something like this, or am I just, I'll take my suspension, I'll come back, and I'll do whatever. Like, he's got resources available where if that's what it took, he could do that. And instead of just challenging the actual ruling in this case, he could take this, you know, down legal avenues where then he challenges the entire process, the entire system by which, you know, drug tests are conducted, by which arbitrators are selected, by USADA's power to even, USADA and the UFC's power to even conduct these types of tests. Like,
correct.
He could challenge all of those things.
He could.
And he could take this I mean, it could be like the Supreme Court. It could go all the way as far as he wants to challenge it, potentially. So, I mean, this could be a massive case. Or, as you said, you saw it in the UFC, know this. California Commission probably knows this.
Oh,
they
yeah.
could come back and say, you know what? That's probably not worth it to us.
Yeah.
Like, we could lose that case. So here's 18 months and just go away. Like, those, yeah. all those things are possible.
Very possible.
To happen. So this becomes much bigger than just a regular steroid case, not just because it's John Jones, but because of everything that could happen. So again, this could be wrapped up in 2 months and they make a settlement and it all goes away. It could go all the way down the road.
What are the chances that John Jones goes out and hires a high-powered legal team and they come and have and bring absolutely no documentation, no proof of anything that they're suggesting? You know where I'm going with this?
With what else?
Throwback to Anderson Silva's defense. I am still flabbergasted. I shouldn't even bring that up because I'm sure I'm losing all of our listeners out there. But Anderson Silva, the greatest fighter of all time prior to John Jones coming up, he failed a drug test. He was given lots of time to prepare. He showed up in Nevada with literally nothing.
Nothing. There was a vial of something.
Literally nothing.
Didn't he have the vial of like the weird potion?
I think he had one vial, but it was like unmarked. And there was no, like, they said they ran tests on it, but they didn't actually bring any of the results of the tests that they said they had run.
Also, as you kind of were alluding to, like, it was just a vial of something, and they're like, we don't even know if you took this. Yeah. We don't know what it contains, what it's supposed to contain, if you took it, where you got it from, and where'd you get it? I don't know. Like, it was just nothing.
It was it was one of the most surreal things I've ever seen. In my entire experience covering this sport, if you ever just bored, really bored, and want to torture yourself, but in a somewhat entertaining way, go back and watch the hearing of Anderson Silva's drug test defense. It is amazing. You want to talk about just money down the drain?
There's been a lot of great commission, like the Nick Diaz one was fantastic too.
Yeah,
just like hours of just weird questioning, and then there was the Chael Sonnen one, which is also fantastic.
Yep.
Of like just bizarre answers and questions and behavior in a courtroom like setting. There's been a lot of those over the years. And listen, a lot of this could happen behind closed doors with the Jones situation, but certainly a fascinating case to monitor going forward and how this is all going to play out. As far as I think the biggest question that will come up will be over. You know, the procedures that are all done and what the powers really are of USADA and the UFC over fighters, just like we are seeing the process challenge in the NFL with some of these suspensions. When you get high-powered attorneys involved, that's what you start going after. So maybe it's not the individual test or this case in particular. It's the whole system that could be challenged. So monitor that, and we'll keep you informed here on the show every Wednesday at 7 o'clock now that we are here for the MMA Insiders. I want to get to what Cormier said tonight. Cormier was on UFC Tonight. He is one of the regular hosts over on Fox Sports 1, and he was able to address this situation for the first time since finding out he'd be champion. He was asked about John Jones' B-sample coming back positive for steroid. He said, I think it's crazy. USADA is being very straight with this, saying he gets due process, but the reality is you can't fail a drug test. You can pass 100 tests, but you can't fail one. We have to wait for due process, but what are we waiting for? They tested the A sample. They tested the B sample. If there's anything, you can't test positive. It's unfair, and I'm very upset about it. Just on that, you can't really blame him for being upset. And I think he has a point to an extent of there has to be a process. There has to be due process. And I'm sure Cormier, if he was in a situation where anything happened, he would be pretty upset about somebody saying he shouldn't get due process. But at the same time, you understand his frustration being a guy who's fighting now someone who has tested positive twice when they were supposed to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And he just says, enough of the due process, he's guilty.
Yeah, and if you remember, you know, Cormier was saying a lot of these things before they fought as well.
Yeah, true.
Before they fought, he was saying that, you know, I've looked at his drug tests from the past, and I've talked about them with drug experts, and I haven't really brought this up in the past because, you know, I lost our first fight and I didn't want to make it sound like I was making excuses, but I think there's fishy things even in the drug test that he passed. If you look really in depth at some of the numbers there. So, you know, he's had his suspicions already, and so no, you can't blame the guy after everything that he's been through. Then again, I mean, he's made a whole lot of money with John Jones, so you know, I don't know how much you can hate somebody that has you know, been such good business with you. But yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, Daniel Cormier has the right to really have any opinion he wants on this.
Yeah, and he was also asked what John Jones should do next about this case. Cormier said he has to fight it. It's a death sentence. It's a very expensive drug, something that's not easily found in a supplement. I've been in the USADA process for 12 years. I've never had these issues. If it was a mistake, you've got to be more careful, especially with all the scrutiny on him after what's already happened. I mean, listen, he obviously doesn't believe that it was a mistake. He knows what he's saying here. He's just saying it wasn't a mistake. We know what he's been doing. And as you said, he's said it all along that John Jones has been cheating. He said it leading up to this fight, and John Jones mocked him and ridiculed him for saying he's a cheater.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I don't know if it's quite vindication for Cormier because he hasn't won against Jones in the cage, but I'm sure deep down Cormier saying, like, I was right. I tried to tell everyone. Like, I think he probably wants to stand on the table and just dance about it.
Yeah, I don't know if he wants to stand on the table and dance about it. You may be right, maybe, but I get more of the impression of, like, he doesn't want to revel in this. He would much more rather just win the fight, but he's not going to shy away from this. You know, he's not going to avoid, you know, if he's asked about this, which obviously he is, it impacts him greatly, and it has for the last, what, 4 years?
Yeah.
So I think at this point, I mean, I don't know, you might be right. You might be right. Secretly, he might be enjoying this, but my guess is that he's just, like, not really enjoying it, but also, no, I'm going to talk about this. I am going to give my opinion on it. I have that right.
So Daniel Cormier is the champion now. One more quote from him from tonight on UFC Tonight to get to, and that was him discussing being the champion once again now that he has been restored as UFC light heavyweight champion. Quote, I lost the fight. That's how I felt. But Dana White called me today and said, if it's a no contest, then the fight didn't happen. And because of that, the championship is getting returned to me. If he cheated, he could not have fought and won the fight. Financially, it's a big difference if I don't fight as the champion as opposed to fighting for the vacant title. I'm taking the belt. He disqualified himself before the fight, so it didn't happen, and I get the belt back, which is the right thing to do. You don't cheat the sport, cheat the fans, or cheat me. Jones, you have all the physical advantages. You're 30 years old, have an 85-inch reach. I'm 38. I would love to wake up and take stuff so I don't have to walk down my stairs sideways, but I don't. Once again, this guy has made a mockery of the sport. So that is a little closer to, you know, reveling in it a little bit and,
yeah,
and
yeah,
criticizing John Jones once again for what, you know, again, Cormier believes that Jones has been cheating his whole career. He's not just saying it now. He's said it all along.
Yeah.
And it is somewhat vindication. But I'm sure this is not the way he wants to get the title back again. Last time it was stripped and then he won the vacant title. He was never able to take it from Jones. I'm sure he wanted to beat him in the cage. But Jones testing positive again, like, it wasn't just once. Now it's kind of shown, like, there's a pattern there. And so I think there's a little bit more of an ability in Cormier's mind to be like, you know what, this is multiple times now. I am the best in the world. I don't have to say it was a fluke or, you know, a technicality. Like, he cheated all along. Who knows what he would be if he wasn't cheating? I really am the champion.
Yeah. I mean, he can be pretty liberal with it, which he is, you know, and John said this prior to their fight. He said, you know, he can say anything he wants. I don't have a platform right now. I can't talk. And that's going to continue. John Jones is not going to be able to really talk about any of this for quite a long time.
We can send out, like, subtle, weird tweets that everybody has to try to analyze. I mean, that's kind of his thing.
Well, that definitely is his thing.
Can you start doing that?
Maybe.
You just be like, you don't have to deal with tomorrow if you're not in today.
Maybe I'll start it and see if it catches on, but I'll kill it real quickly if it's obvious it's not working.
I think you should just start putting things like that out. Yeah, just do it, like, right after the show. Just send something vague and weird out. See if people, like, ask about it.
I'll start thinking about it now.
I like that. That'd be good. You have a platform, so you can do that for sure. That's Brett Okamoto from ESPN. Adam Hill from the Las Vegas Review Journal. MMA Insiders in our new time slot on Wednesday nights. We'll be here 7 to 8 each and every week, breaking down what is going on in the world of MMA. A lot of John Jones and Daniel Cormier tonight, but there was an event this weekend, UFC 215 up in Edmonton. We'll get to that. And a new title fight has been added to UFC 216.
MMA Insider Show.
Dear MMA Insiders, Wednesday night, Adam Hill and Brett Okamoto here with you for this hour, letting you know everything going on in the world of MMA. UFC 215 was this weekend in Edmonton. We'll get into that. Fights that happened, fights that didn't happen, and also the rest of the division, because I did want to touch briefly on somebody that was here in town last night that we were talking about during the break. But Amanda Nunes, Valentina Shevchenko fought for the women's bantamweight title. We'll get to some of the controversy and some of the action in that fight. But we know that the bantamweight division was basically created for someone named Ronda Rousey, who used to be a fighter in the world of MMA. She was in town yesterday. We both had different experiences with her, I guess you could say. I don't think fans or listeners really care about our dealings with fighters or with athletes in general. But I am interested in, I want to hear your take, and I am interested if you want to hit us up on Twitter, Adam Hill, LVRJ, or at Biokomoto ESPN. If fans feel let down by the fact that Ronda Rousey really has not talked to anyone or spoken about her career, what she's going to do, I don't think she owes, I hear people say, oh, she owes that to people. I don't think she owes it to anybody. I don't think it matters. But I'm interested in, you know, for those that didn't watch Brett's interview last night, first of all, she was supposed to do interviews with some other media, including I was over there to try to talk to her. She decided to just do WWE interviews yesterday, and she even shot them down when they asked about her fighting future. She didn't talk to the rest of the people, and then last night you talked to her. I'm sure a lot of people watched the video. I certainly watched it, where you asked her what's next for her, and she said, hey, this is about my friend Shayna Baszler. I'm not going to talk about myself. Because I feel like Ronda Rousey, more than a lot of other athletes, like, had a connection with, like, fans were just felt connected to her. They felt like she was fighting, like, for them in some way. I wonder if fans are upset or hurt or annoyed in any way the fact that she has handled things the way she has, or are people like, leave her alone, if she doesn't want to talk, she doesn't want to talk? Because I'm fine with that. I'm fine with, hey, I don't want to talk, I don't want to do anything. Totally fine with me. I just wonder how fans feel about it, if they can't hear from her, or, you know, she was everywhere. They hung on every word she said. They were all about it. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, I want to hear what she has to say. Or do they not care? Have they moved on?
I mean, I think when you're as big as Rousey was, and, you know, arguably still is, I mean, she's not as big as she was at her peak, but obviously she's still extremely famous. I think you're going to cover a wide spectrum of people. I mean, every emotion that you just described is probably felt by someone out there. There are people that don't care. There are people that really care. There are people that are angry about it, people that are more sad about it. There are a lot of people out there who probably are just like, well, I just don't really care about you anymore because of how poorly you've handled everything. I think if there's an overarching theme to it, and this is kind of me talking personally, but I think a lot of people share this. It's not that Rousey, you know, it's so terrible that she really didn't want to ever talk about her losses. I mean, we can all have our own personal opinion on that, but it's not really that big of a deal. Like, everyone handles winning and losing differently. Everybody, any athlete. So who cares, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's because of what she was built up to be and what she symbolized. That she was human. She was female strength. There was such a marketing push behind her being female strength. And so when you're out there and you're powerful when times are good, and then they're bad, and you're not, and you don't have that same kind of resistance and that same kind of perseverance, then you kind of felt like you were sold a little bit of a fairy tale. To me, that's what I think is the overarching thing, is who cares how she handles wins or losses, but she was built into something that she didn't act like when things went bad.
Yeah, and I also think it's, like, she was built, yeah, she had a part in building herself that way. But, I mean, she was built, you know, by, you know, a creation, and by, you know, certain media pushing that narrative or whatever. And, like, she had a part of it. She didn't shy away from it. But it's also not fair to put that on her if she doesn't want it. I don't think she ever didn't want it, though. And now, like, to look back on it and be like, oh, she should have done this, or she should have handled it this way. Like, you're saying it's not her responsibility. I'm saying it's really not. I don't know. I just wonder how fans feel when they don't get those answers. Are they let down? I completely realize right now that what I'm presenting is like, oh, she's not talking to the media. That's not what I'm trying to say. it's, I wonder if fans care that she's not giving them those answers.
I have a hard time believing that a lot of fans out there still care today. I just think that when they look back on the entire Ronda Rousey legacy, Ronda Rousey, just it's weird because her legacy is secure. I mean, she was the greatest female fighter there for a while, and she pushed the sport into a place where I'm not sure it would be without her.
Yeah.
She certainly accelerated that. So everything that she accomplished and she did, she should be revered for it. And it's sad that she's not. I mean, I think you and I talked about it when I spoke to Dana about it, and I was like, is this kind of sad, you know, that she won't even come to an event now because it seems like she's ashamed of her last two performances. Like, why can't she just, oh yeah, I lost, you know, the sport caught up to me, but I brought it to this place and you know, be celebrated for that. I just go back to this whole thing. I think a lot of what we saw with Rousey was her, but it almost like it got too big for one person. I mean, the Rousey mania turned into something that almost no one could live up to. I think Ronda, there was a lot of truth in how she was marketed, but she also was someone who really enjoyed her privacy, yeah. who didn't want to be, you know, just in the public eye 100% of the time. And I think that did play a major role in her falling apart and also handling the losses in the way that she did.
I think part of what you said there is actually really something that I've wanted to talk about, and I've thought about a lot, is that if the feeling is that she is, you know, ashamed of the performances, the reason that she's not around and doesn't speak out about UFC or talk about UFC at all or do any interviews about it, if it is, man, those two performances were embarrassing, I think that's unfair and completely unfortunate,
yeah,
for somebody. And I think it's a missed opportunity for her, because one of the things she always talked about, yeah, I know she talked about being dominant and being a great athlete and all these other things, but one of the things she always said is she's proud of what she did for the sport, and she wants to leave the sport in a really healthy place, uh-huh. especially the women's division, in a really healthy place going forward. And she did that.
Yeah.
She accomplished all those things.
Yeah.
And she could she can extend it even further by now coming out. Like last week leading up to Nunes Shevchenko, when not many people were even talking about the card, talking about the fight, she could do one interview and be like, man, this division's awesome. Shevchenko is a great fighter. Nunes was awesome against me. Her power is incredible. She could do one interview anywhere.
Yeah.
The quotes would be all over the place, and she would have hyped up a fight that needed to be hyped up just by those words, and show how good the division is and how it doesn't need her and how strong she left it. Like, she could have done all those things easily, and she would be really good in that role.
Yeah, it's a great point.
So if she's ashamed of it, that's completely unfair and unfortunate, and she shouldn't be, because she absolutely should be proud and still be. She doesn't have to do a thing. Like, I understand if she doesn't want to do a whole bunch of interviews, if she doesn't want to be on the public eye. She can talk to one outlet.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody picks up what she says, and all of a sudden this division is booming again because of her and you know, leaving that legacy to the next generation, which is what she wanted to do all along, what she said.
She could have gone the Gina Carano route. You know, Gina Carano still shows up at an MMA event. People cheer like crazy, as they should.
Yeah.
You know, she was a pioneer. She was a trendsetter, and she's celebrated everywhere she goes. And when big women's fights come up, she gets interviewed and she says great things. She doesn't go off and do 10 hours of it. Yeah, she does what she wants, and she has a very healthy relationship with mixed martial arts. Ronda could have had an even healthier one, I think.
I think she still could, yeah, if she wants to. And you know, it's up to her. I'm not even saying she should be doing those things, yeah, or like it's
just
a responsibility.
That it's possible. Yeah.
It's very possible for her to continue carrying on her legacy of what she wanted to leave behind without even doing a whole lot. Like it seems like it'd be very easy for her. Well, as we said, there was a fight in that division that she helped create. Let's say she did create the women's bantamweight division title fight last week, UFC 215 in Edmonton. Wasn't supposed to be the headliner. We'll get into that in a little bit, but. Amanda Nunes, Valentina Shevchenko. Nunes wins a decision once again, as she did the first time. Very close. I would say controversial. Certainly sparked a lot of debate. I guess, first of all, how did you have it scored?
I had Valentina Shevchenko winning 3-2.
Did you ever in the fifth round?
No. But I, actually, watching back, I kind of thought that I should have.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting case where I said at the time that I thought the fifth round was very close, and I think it's easy to just look at it and say, oh, I got the takedowns. She won.
Yeah.
But that's not really how you're supposed to score a fight. It's not how a fight should be scored. And Shevchenko made great points about, yeah, I got taken down, and then I started landing punches all over the place from the bottom, which is absolutely true. But at the time, watching the fight, I thought, like a lot of people did, oh, she got the takedown. Judges are going to give it to her no matter what. And I think that's what they ended up doing. But I also don't agree, and I don't like all the people yelling about, you know, fixed and or not fixed, excuse me, robbery and being angry about it completely unfair. Like it was
that's gonna happen. Yeah, you're gonna get mad about that. You're just gonna get mad over and over and over again, Adam. I mean, that happens every time there's even a halfway close fight. Is the word robbery gets pulled out. I always love it that at the end of a close fight, you know that the winner during their speech is gonna get booed. Whatever their post fight interview is in the cage, it doesn't matter who won. They are definitely going to get booed if a fight is close, which is insanity because a close fight is actually the most entertaining thing that you can watch in this sport, correct?
Of course.
Where both guys or girls are, you know, ratcheting it up, reaching that next level, digging deep, and at the end of it, it's just a guarantee that the winner is going to get booed.
Always. It's how it always happens. And this fight was no different. I did want to get into what I thought. Listen, I thought it was a close fight. I thought it was a fascinating fight. I didn't have a huge problem with the verdict. I scored it for Nunes. You scored it for Shevchenko. I think it was close either way. I wouldn't have had a problem either way. I do think it's really interesting how Shevchenko handled it because, by the way, first of all, absolutely how I would have handled it too. No question about it. Now, I know a lot of people just expect you lose a close decision or you have a call go against you in any sport, anything like that. You're just supposed to handle it with quote-unquote class or whatever.
Mm.
No, I don't care. Rant and rave about how the judges suck, they're idiots, they're wrong. I'm fine with
well
that.
She didn't really do that. She
I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what they're talking about. Look at her face.
I thought she handled it great too because she did rant, as you said, but she did it while like still showing a lot of respect to the commission and the judges.
I don't know. I think you're fooled by the voice and by like the by looking at her.
Don't
instead
patronize
of
me, Adam.
It
takes more than just a sweet voice.
No, it doesn't.
To trick me.
I don't think it does. if some like heavyweight dude was saying these things, I'd be like, come on, man.
No, absolutely not.
I think you would. I think you're fooled by the Shevchenko dance and the soft voice and everything else.
I've never even thought about those things till you brought them up.
No, that's exactly what you're fooled by. I think it is different. That's the unfair double standard. I think it is different.
Well, she came to the post-fight press conference. She's like, I will respect the decision, but I do not agree with the decision. You know, she
but
led
in
with
the
that.
Cage.
And maybe she was told to say that,
yeah.
You know, in between. But, yeah, I loved her reaction. I mean, her reaction was, like, putting her hands out with this kind of, like, stupefied look on her face, just, like, shaking her head, like, what just happened? that's just a great gif.
Oh, no, that's the wrong term. You didn't see that last week?
No, I didn't.
The creator, I say GIF too.
Oh, great. What did I just start here? This
no,
is going to be a
creator,
huge tangent, isn't it?
The creator of GIFs.
It is GIF.
Came out and said, it's a GIF. And he's the one that created it, so I guess he gets to decide the answer. Now, I've always said GIF as well, but we're wrong.
That's like, if the creator of the own word is on the wrong end of what 99% of people say, though.
Is he wrong? He might be wrong.
No,
he gets
to
decide, I feel like.
I don't know, man.
He created it.
The rules of like lexicon and language are different than you don't get to like patent the phonetic.
You do. Just like with names, I feel like. Like right now, if Joanna Jędrzejczyk came out and she's like, no, my name is Jerzy Wuszyk, he'd be like, I guess it is. That's her name. Like she's the one that gets to decide.
Well, it's a little different when it's your name.
No, it's not. If you create it, it's your thing. I think it's even more.
Because that's what people are calling
you. You have even more authority.
You. They're not calling. I mean, he can say it's GIF all he wants, but that doesn't. No.
No, he created it. You have even more control over it if you create it than if it's your name. Your name is passed on. Like, you could ask the parents, how do you say it? Like, it's passed on. If you create something, that's yours. That's your child you get to name.
It's like, did you watch Founder?
Not yet. It's in my queue.
Okay, but you were familiar with the story?
Yes.
Okay, so the original founders of McDonald's.
Yeah.
It was their idea, their name, and all that, but they don't have any say in it, right?
Yeah.
He's basically lost the ability to have any say. It's GIF. It's 100%
no,
GIF.
No, it's not. If Ray Kroc came out and said it's Big Make, it's Big Make, not Big Mac. If he created it.
No, no.
Yes. Yes, that's how it works.
No.
If it's yours, you get to decide.
This is a case-by-case basis.
No, it's not.
This
he
is definitely
created
a case-by-case basis.
It's his thing.
Now, this is the one I want. If you're listening out there, please tweet us. It is GIF.
No.
It is 100% GIF.
I thought so, too,
GIF.
Until he said it.
It's still GIF.
I think you're wrong. I feel this is an outrage. You know what? I can't even take this anymore. We'll step away. We can let cooler heads prevail. We'll come back, get into some of the more of the results from UFC 215. And what happened to the fight that never took place?
MMA Insider Show.
MMA Insiders wrapping things up on a Wednesday night. Our new spot, 7 to 8 o'clock here each and every Wednesday, breaking down everything going on in the world of MMA. Adam Hill from the Las Vegas Review-Journal, Brett Okamoto from ESPN. Mark Seidel always here with us as always, but not the hardcore MMA fan that we are. So he stays out of the way and watches his Astros and helps us with behind-the-scenes knowledge. Like what we were arguing about when we stepped away. I thought we'd be done. I was hoping we'd step away. We'd all take a deep breath. We'd get back in MMA. But the debate raged on. So now, is there new information that we need to know about?
Yeah, well, I mean, it led to some obvious questions, right? So does JIF stand for anything? Because otherwise, if he wanted
it... GIF, you mean?
Yes. GIF, because if he wanted it... If it doesn't stand for anything, and if he wanted it to be GIF... He should have spelled it J-I-F, but it's spelled G-I-F because it does stand for something. Graphics
Interchange Format.
Okay. And so, graphics.
No.
Hard G.
Don't just throw that out there because it also had facts against that.
Weak ones.
Not weak ones, real ones.
No. I mean... You know why I can't bring up those facts because they open up a rabbit hole that we would never get out of.
That's
but just
fine
know,
with me.
Just know that they are extremely weak facts. This is like when, you know, when like a company is run by a board, and the main guy, the chairman, he's getting to an old age. He's making decisions that are hurting the brand. We are the board, and this dude is the guy who's hurting the brand at this point.
I mean, or the country.
Oh, okay. Right. That escalated like, quickly.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I know. Listen, there's things going on at ESPN. You probably shouldn't comment about that right now. It's fine. Yes, it's GIF, is what everybody says. It's wrong. It's GIF. That's what the founder of the GIF said. He says it's GIF. That's what we're going to go with. It's also, as you guys
that's
pointed
what you're
out,
go with.
You guys pointed out it's not JPEG, or it's JPEG, not JFEG, even though it's, what is it, photo?
Yes.
The P is for photo.
Joint Photographic Experts Group.
So it should be JFEG, but it's not. It's JPEG, JPEG. So it's also GIF. That's how you say it. That's how we're going to go with from now on. If we ever mention GIFs again on the show, that's how it is. It's GIFs because that's what the guy that invented it wants. I've seen a lot of GIFs of the end of the fight. I haven't. I'm just trying to transition into the rest of UFC 215. The fight that didn't take place, I guess, was the bigger story coming out of that card. The main event, scrap 48 hours before the scheduled start time of UFC 215 up in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. Ray Borg, we thought might have issues cutting weight coming into this. He says he was sick and sick all week. I know a lot of fighters have come out and criticized him. What do you think about his late withdrawal?
I think it's not the first time, man.
Yeah.
You know, so was he sick? You know, a lot of people are saying he was. I spoke to a lot of people who did say, yes, he was sick. I also spoke to a lot of people who said I was around him, and he didn't seem sick. So,
well, I think one of the problems stems from the interview. Now, listen, I hesitate to talk about this because you hear this all the time, and then it turns out it's not true, whatever. People are pointing to an interview that he did the day before pulling out with TMZ where he said, I have never felt this good going into a fight. I'm so healthy. Like, that's what you say.
Yes,
of
course.
So I know people come out and say, well, why would you say something like that? That's just what you say. But it doesn't help you when you then pull out the next day that you're on record saying those things the day before.
But at that time, you don't know if you're going to fight or not. I mean, I actually interviewed him on the day before he pulled out as well. He was on my podcast, 5 rounds. I'm sure you listened.
Point.
You're just forgetting right now.
I did.
But, yeah, he said the same thing. And it's just like, well, yeah. What else are you going to say? Like, I remember the night of the fight, someone asked Demetrius, like, hey, did the UFC contact you and let you know that he was sick earlier in the week? And he's like, no. I was like, Why would they?
Right.
Why would they? Hey, Demetrius, just so you know, your opponent has injuries here, here, and here, and he's also battling the flu. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
No, everybody is healthy until they're not healthy, until it comes out that they are not healthy. So that interview doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I would agree, but I mean, that's, you have that out there, and so I don't know. Maybe you just don't mention your health at all. Just don't give interviews about your health.
Nah, man.
And don't bring it up.
Until it's 100% I'm not fighting, then I feel like $1 million I'm going to strangle Demetrius Johnson on Saturday. That's what I'm saying.
You know, every fight I would talk about not feeling well, by the way. I'll be like, oh, I'm going to get out there on Saturday. But camp didn't go well. I'm not feeling good.
No, like,
I would have that stuff out there.
Oh, that's a good shtick,
like,
actually.
Like, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Like, it's great.
I've been going through a lot of personal problems in my life. I haven't been sleeping at all.
Because then after
super
the fight,
nervous.
If you lose, you're like, I told you. I told you I wasn't feeling good. What do you want from me?
Well, in a weird way, it would actually probably get more people to watch you. Like, oh, man, I can't wait to see how terrible this guy looks.
That fight now goes to UFC 216 here in Las Vegas. Earlier today, I thought we learned that it was going to be the main event. I guess it hasn't been determined yet officially whether it'll be the main event of the card. But all of a sudden, that card looks a lot better.
It does.
You look around, you're like, all right, there's a good heavyweight fight. You got Kevin Lee and Tony Ferguson, which is a fight I'm very, very interested in. I'm looking more forward to that fight than I am the Demetrius Johnson-Ray Borg fight. But as a, you know, as a supporting fight, that fight's
That's
even better
deal.
Now.
That never felt like a main event.
Right.
Now it feels like we have a main event, and, oh, we have a killer co-main event.
Right.
You know, that's what it felt like. Because it felt like October is like, we didn't get a main event. We got, like, you know, interim title fight because no one else was willing to fight. Everybody wants to fight in New York.
Exactly.
You know, now it feels like we have a real main event and a really awesome co-main event. So it helped out 216 tremendously.
Any other takeaways from UFC 215? Because I would say I think I was wrong certainly about Rafael Dos Anjos, former lightweight champion, who I thought was going to run into bigger guys at welterweight, especially long. You know, Magny's reach is incredible. He's going to run into longer, bigger guys and have trouble. It ended up being a great matchup for him because once he got Magny to the ground, he was just like too sturdy for him and just destroyed him. But were you impressed with Dos Anjos, or the one who everybody was impressed with, Henry Cejudo, looked fantastic?
Yeah. I think it's one of those situations where they looked absolutely amazingly impressive, and yet you don't want to get too carried away because even Henry Cejudo is saying, you know, I still want to learn. I still want to prepare. Next time I face Demetrius Johnson, I want it to be the right timing. So if he's even saying that it's not the right timing, then I'm going to say it's not the right timing either. So as tremendous as he looked, let's see him again. And same thing with Dos Anjos. Phenomenal. I mean, that is always the question. When a guy's moving up in weight, can he deal with the bigger guys, especially the bigger guys who can grapple? He got both of that in Neil Magny, and he looked like that. However, we have seen Magny lose in that fashion before, I'll bet to Damian Maia. But he has lost in that way before. And that's only two wins for Dos Anjos. So let him get another fight.
Yeah, we shall see how he progresses at 170, but certainly impressed with that. He got him to the ground. He got Magny to the ground with a leg kick sweep type combination, kind of the
Is
back
that a
of the leg.
Technical term?
I don't know. I'm just throwing out that. It was a weird, it was like a leg kick, but it was from behind. So it was like more of a, it was a very, it was impressive the way he got him there and then beat him down. But I was transitioning to what happened with Gilbert Melendez in that fight against Jeremy Stephens, who just took some brutal kicks to the leg. His leg looked disgusting in the first round, but he kept fighting.
Yeah.
I mean, my thoughts were, I don't know why he was still fighting. I wish the corner would have been not let him fight.
Yeah.
But then again, you look in the corner and Nate Diaz is sitting over there, so there's no way he's not fighting.
Yeah, another guy I just had on my podcast today, actually. We had a long talk about it. I told him, I was like, hey, man, I get it. I get the fighter mentality. You don't want to be pulled out of there. He tells his corner, leave the towel in the locker room. Don't even bring it out here. Don't. You're damn well not throwing that thing in there. And he tells the referee the same thing. He's like, I trained for this. Don't take this away from me. Let me fight through it. Let me get knocked out. And that's great, and that's phenomenal. But I told Gil, I was like, you know, a lot of us normal people on the outside who don't fight for a living are saying, well, that's sort of like your corner is your last line of defense. And if you're in a fight like that, it allows you to save face, you know, because you're not the one who's like, quote, unquote, giving up. But if I care about you, and I know that you can't walk right now, there's very little chance that you're going to win this fight. So why am I going to let you take leg kicks for the next 7 minutes? He disagreed with me. He said, absolutely not.
Right.
Do
but
not take that away from me.
What would it take for Nate Diaz to throw in the towel on one of his friends?
Actually, you know what? Nate would probably be that guy that would surprise you and do it. Because remember, his brother did it. Nick did it. So it's actually, maybe it's the guys that you don't think will do it.
Yeah, maybe. I guess that's possible. I thought that I thought we'd get to a point where Conor McGregor's corner would do it in the boxing match, but we never got that far, certainly, and he wanted to keep going. So that was the UFC 215 card. As we mentioned, UFC 216 adds a main event. There is a fight card this week, UFC Fight Night 116 in Pittsburgh. It's the return of Luke Rockhold, former middleweight champion. I think this is an awful, awful no-win situation that he's in right now.
Oh, of course. That's terrible.
It could not be worse. It's a guy, he's fighting David Branch in the main event. David Branch is a very capable veteran guy.
Uh-huh.
He absolutely can beat pretty much anyone in the division. No question about it. The guy's good.
Yeah. Well,
but a win over him does nothing.
Exactly.
A win over David Branch does literally nothing for you, and it's a dangerous fight.
I mean, I personally think that a win over Branch will get him basically to where he was going into that fight, and that was talking about fighting Yoel Romero. I mean, I think if he wins, that they just make that fight, you know, which is what they wanted to make to begin with. But they were arguing over 3 rounds versus 5 rounds. At the end, Romero just took some time off. Rockhold wanted to fight. So it gets him back in the cage. It gets him paid, but nothing to gain, everything to lose. I mean, if he loses this, now it's been how long since he's won a fight? Chris Weidman at the end of 2015?
You seem to dismiss my notion that David Branch really could probably beat anybody in the division.
I am saying he could. Well,
I know he could beat the champion in the division.
Okay, that's a fair point.
I mean, if you want to lay it out like that, like I'm not saying he would. Like he's a big underdog for a reason. Luke Rockhold is minus 450.
Yeah.
But David Branch, he's just that guy that's good.
Right.
That does nothing. Like nobody knows
guy.
Who he is.
He's that guy. He offers nothing because not many people know who he is. He's not extremely exciting. He is kind of ranked, I guess. Like where is he ranked? Like number 10 or so?
9, I think.
So, but yes, for a guy like Luke, there is no payoff in this fight.
Lost the co-main event. Mike Perry, Thiago Alves off. I was very much looking forward to that fight. Perry's still going to fight, but we kind of lose the luster of him against Alves, which would have been some
the fight of the night.
Some
great
violence.
That was it. That was the one.
Unfortunate that one.
Hey, Triple G Canelo in town this week, though.
Wow, look at that. You going to be out there?
I am.
I'll
are
be
you?
Out there, too. Yes. MMA Insiders go boxing this week, so we'll
look at us.
Give you an update next week. Well, now, hey, listen, now that Connor's in there, like we're boxing people now. That's what we
true.
Do.
We're covering the beat.
So we'll let you guys know what goes on. Triple G Canelo next week. Don't forget, 7 o'clock now, Wednesday nights, after the Coach Tony Sanchez radio show right here. Join Adam Hill, Brett Okamoto, MMA Insiders. We'll give you a recap next week of UFC Fight Night 116. And who knows what happens between now and then. Today was a crazy day, in case you missed it at the beginning. Daniel Cormier, once again, light heavyweight champion. John Jones has been stripped of the title once again. Second time he's been stripped as champion. He also was stripped as interim champ. So Daniel Cormier, once again, light heavyweight champ. We will talk to you next Wednesday, 7 o'clock.
MMA Insider Show.